more for your visit here.
It was good because it's like you go into a place, and I went in the spirit first and looked into the atmosphere and saw some things and went to God for sort of authorization for be able to do things, a mandate to do things. And I was given certain mandates, but it was great to go and then get earthly agreement with the guys there. So first evening I just sort of said, look, we can open up an everlasting door and see a real encounter with God this weekend. I can do that, but I need your agreement. And they were yes, so I just opened up that door and we just really had an open, a real open heaven.
Wow.
Yeah, which was great, and the worship was really, really great, and yeah, very, very encouraging. And then each step of the way, just built from sharing my testimony with people, and then right through to bring in some revelatory things that I'd seen in the heavens, and then we looked to outwork them, release those things, which was great, really good, yeah, encouraging.
Man. Okay, well, we're excited. Everybody's buzzing about it, and we're trying to figure out how we're gonna fit everybody in now. We haven't even done any advertising, and we're already splitting at the seams as far as the numbers we think we're gonna have. So anyway.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, it's numbers. I'm not really bothered about numbers. It's just the right people being there and being hungry. And I think if there's a hunger and a desire in people's hearts, that draws out of the spirit and certainly draws things out of me. So yeah, it'll be great.
Well, hunger's definitely part of the deal here. I am just totally amazed at how they're grabbing a hold of this stuff and just running with it on their own, and doing the stuff they need to do with the gateways and the living sacrifice and all that stuff. And I'm just standing back, just in awe of what the Holy Spirit's doing. It's pretty cool.
Excellent.
One of the things that is happening is we're having more and more people, myself included, who are, we're learning how to take our mountains. And you took us to an activation doing that, and I've done a few activations like that. So folks are taking their mountains, but they are encountering, dragons. And
They are or they aren't. They are.
they are.
Yeah.
And so I'm getting a lot of questions of, what do we do? I mean, we know the basics, but you made one comment, and there was one thing I wanted to clear up for myself. You made a comment in one of the hangouts just a few days ago, a week ago, about how you need to deal with dragons on two levels. You need to deal with them not only in the heavens, but also their reason for why they are there. Otherwise, you kill one and more will come, or something like that. Could you just expand on that a little bit and talk about that some
Yeah,
more?
sure.
Maybe go through the whole process of
Yeah,
slaying dragons.
okay. Right. Well, from a perspective of your mountain, who you are, the authority you have in the highest sort of dimension of the kingdom of God, there's no dragons there or no giants or anything of that nature. Basically, that is looked after by the angel that's assigned to you in heaven, and they care to take that and administer it to a degree according to the purpose of God and your destiny until you're at a level of maturity that you can go and be invested with authority and enthroned there. But the seven mountains below that, which are the spheres that come out of that which is ours and our calling in God and the destiny that we've been given, those are often blocked, and the enemy wants to usurp our authority. He cannot take who we are, because in a sense our spirit is a mountain, and that spirit is not accessible to him when we're born again in the spirit of God, and we're born into the kingdom in that sense. But our spheres and our areas of influence that we've been called to administer, he seeks to hinder that. Obviously, God wants to expand his kingdom, and his mission, I guess, is to hinder the expansion of the kingdom, because if God's kingdom gets bigger, his gets smaller. You know, I wouldn't call him having a kingdom, but his influence gets smaller because less and less people are giving him any authority because they know their own authority. So I think that's what he does. And because we've never really been used to engaging at these things at this level, we tend to just focus on what's going on around our lives. And so we're stewarding those things that we've been given responsibility for in this realm, and we come up against obstacles and, you know, mountains or opposition in a sense, and we then have to deal with those things. And we spend a lot of time actually trying to deal with those things that are hindering or obstructing the fullness of the grace of God and the mercy of God being released around us and things, because we're trying to fight them in this realm rather than deal with them in the other realms. And you have really a system of worship that the enemy looks to engage us in. So he wants us to worship him. That was always his desire, from a sense. Therefore, how do we worship the devil? Well, Christians would be horrified to think that they worship the devil in any way. But worship really is obedience, and it's like obeying something or coming into agreement with something. It's not singing songs, it's an attitude of heart in which we're surrendered. Well, if God responds and rewards faith, then the enemy operates through fear. So in any aspect of our lives that we're operating in fear, then we're actually giving authority to the enemy and we're bowing down to him. We're actually agreeing that he is higher and more powerful than God in our lives, because we're, rather than trusting God's faithfulness, God's provision in salvation for protection and blessing and deliverance and everything else, we are in fear of what the enemy can do. And therefore we worship him. And most people don't see it that way, but in reality that's what they're doing. Because the enemy has no authority other than that which we give him, and we give him authority by coming into agreement and recognizing him in that way. So any fear area is building a temple on our mountains in heaven. And it builds a structure there which the enemy occupies and hinders and stops us fully functioning there. And then that authorizes that which was in the atmosphere of the earth, which is we would normally call them principalities or powers or rulers, wicked forces of wickedness, that list of different spiritual beings that operate in the atmosphere of the earth, fallen angels, that empowers them. And you have this circle that we do things here, we agree with the enemy, gives authority in the heavens, that releases authority into the atmosphere, and therefore there's no open heaven over us, there's oppression, heaviness, or an atmosphere, and it goes around. So we have to break that cycle. And often there are specific things that may go with fear that are an indication that we are allowing the enemy activity. So things like unforgiveness, things like pride, materialism, using earthly things to meet spiritual needs. They're all things that the enemy can use to build his structure in our lives and in the realms of heaven. So when the first time I ever saw a mountain, I saw our church mountains in my first encounters in heaven, and I was taken up into the atmosphere and through the atmosphere to actually see how heavy the atmosphere was, and then went into to see these mountains. I didn't really know at the time where they were or what they were. I just saw these mountains. I saw these structures on some of the mountains and certain thrones there that weren't occupied by anybody I knew. And, you know, so I was like, what are these? And a sense of indignancy rose up in me, and I was like, how dare they be on our mountains? Well, they were there because we hadn't occupied them, and we had built systems that gave them opportunity. And God showed me, you know, like Samson, when he was in the temple of Dagon, there was two pillars that held the whole thing up. And there's always two pillars that hold up the enemy's kingdom, because he cannot never have three. So if you have fear in agreement with anything, then you create opportunity for the enemy to manifest his blocking power, his hindrances to our lives. So we have to identify, well, what are those pillars? Fear would be always one. And what are the other things? And they're often, obviously, directed towards our mountains. So in our church mountains, we have a church mountain of good news. They all come from Isaiah 61, which is our sort of spiritual foundation. And the church good news mountain, the other pillar was authority. And we thought, well, what's the enemy doing with authority? And what are we doing with authority that's giving him the access? So we had to see God about that. And we went back. Obviously, you look in the temple. Sorry, you look in the courts. You seek God for revelation. What is the legal right that the enemy has had because of a lack of authority or whatever the issue is with authority linked with fear? And so in the very early days when I first planted the church and laid the foundations, I was fairly insecure in that gift. I had stepped out in faith and had sort of left. We left where we lived and we came and moved to begin the church here. The previous church I was involved with had an element to it that it was linked to a sort of a controlling system, you know, and I had in my heart, I don't want to be controlling in any way. So I was very loose when it came to authority, because I was fearful of exercising uncontrol or doing wrong things. Well, the enemy latched onto that because of fear. And my heart was not wrong. I didn't want to be controlling, and I'd experienced control, so I didn't want that to be the foundation of what we did. But because of that, I was reticent to exercise authority. And so, in a sense, I knew that I was laying apostolic foundations, but I was not as clear or confident in doing that and outworking that as I should have been. And so authority has always been an issue, because the enemy got hold of that and set up something that hindered us. You know, we have other mountains, and God showed us what were the specific things that linked to fear gave the enemy opportunity to hinder. And as a result of that, there were some giants and there were some dragons that were associated with those mountains. Now, I rather foolishly, looking back, went and killed all those dragons. But, of course, I was listening to Ian Clayton this week, and he said something that struck me. He said, you know, what you dispossess, you must step into. So I dispossessed a whole lot of things, and then suddenly realized, what do I do now? You know, and I wasn't in a position at the time to have sufficiently trained up people. We didn't understand about the bench of three and even occupying those mountains properly, because people just, my first experiences of them were sort of right at the beginning before I'd even shared any of this stuff. So it was a problem. And it still is a problem in a sense. We're still working through encouraging people to take responsibility on those mountains and rule, because people find it difficult to take responsibility through various reasons. Some of which, one of the meanings of responsibility is blame. So people get it wrong; they think they're going to be blamed, which is what the enemy sows in with our view of God. God is waiting to punish us, to blame us, to jump on us, when he only has grace and mercy available to give us. So if we're expecting punishment from God because we have that view that of that religious spirit that says he's out to get you rather than he's always smiling over you, you know, that he sees you as righteous regardless of what you're doing, you know, therefore we can always run to him rather than run from him and hide in the bushes and cover up with fig leaves and try and make amends in a wrong way to make sure that his favor is okay. He's always favorable. No matter what we did, we have access to go and step into his presence because he loves us, you know. So there's that whole system that the enemy has used to hinder and block us. And so when you go onto the mountains and you look to deal with those spiritual symbols of authority, in a sense, because they are symbols of the enemy trying to usurp our authority by intimidating us and creating fear, you have to know your authority. Number one, if you're going to deal with a dragon or a giant or any other ogre or whatever there might be, you have to know your authority. And to defeat it easily, you have to come from above it. So I would not encourage people to try and deal with dragons and giants and things on their mountains if they're not occupying their top mountain, that they can then come from authority over and administer down the rule of God. And also, what gives you the authority is knowing the truth. You know, the truth that you know will set you free. But you have to know the truth. It's not just truth, it's truth that you know, that you believe in, that is part of you. So you need to know your identity as a dragon slayer, basically. I have more authority. I am an overcomer. I am more than a conqueror. You know, God called me to rule. I need to know that. And in this specific area of a particular mountain, I need to then know the truth, and I need to make sure that I am not operating in fear or any other thing that continues to give the enemy authority. Because if I try and slay a dragon and I'm still operating in the things that gives it authority to do that, it's more difficult. And if, as I said previously in another session, if you continue to do the things here that empower things there, then more will come. You know, it's the same principle. Is you get deliverance and you clean the house, and if you don't fill the house, which means stepping into the position of authority, then the enemy comes back with seven worse and fills the house for you, and you're worse than you were in the first place because you've not worked out the freedom that you've been given and you've gone back into slavery. You know, and so it's really, really important to make sure that there's an awareness of why the dragon is there. And if you need to find out, go to the courts and get the accusation. Demand to hear why it's been able to set up some sort of system on your mountain to usurp your authority. So when you know, then you need to deal with that by repentance, by renouncing it, by making sure that you have no agreements with it, that you get separation from it, and that then you begin to walk in freedom here. Now, people would say, well, don't you deal with the dragon first so that then you can become free? Well, the reality is you have to deal with why you've given it authority and remove that authority so that you can kill it. You know, so I would use the court system, the judicial system, to give you a mandate to kill it. Then you have confidence. So when you go up against a dragon like that, you are as big as it is. It is, or bigger, when you come at a dragon, like from below, because I know people who said, well, I've been at the bottom of my mountain and I've seen this dragon and I've sort of tried to go up. When I got there, it was so big and I was, you know, and, you know, God is gracious and he will help us. And this person said, you know, then some scriptures came into my mind and I used and declared them, and it was like each declaration was a sword strike, and then this thing just came down to size. In reality, the truth was just raising him up to be the size he should have been, not a grasshopper, you know. And it's like That was the point with the children of Israel. We are grasshoppers in their eyes and in ours. So if you think of yourself as a grasshopper, they will certainly see you as a grasshopper, and then they will intimidate you, and you'll think, how on earth can I kill this massive dragon? When the reality is, you are bigger than it. So what I do, once I would have dealt with the reasons that it was operating, removed them, got a mandate, then I would come from my mountain above and come down above it and take its head off. Because this head is only the symbol of authority. So as soon as you know you have higher authority, you're already above it, and you can come down and remove its head. You know, and I know Ian talks about removing the tail, because the tail often is a whip that will try and get you with lies to stop you believing you've got the authority. So deal with those two things, making sure you deal with it. Some people deal with the tail, and some people first. I don't know. I just do whatever comes in the sense of the flow. And once you've dealt with it, cut it open and see everything that it's been hindering, everything it's robbed you, everything it's usurped from you. So there may well be symbols in there. There may be crowns. There may be scrolls. There may be finances. There may be gold. Also, I've seen all sorts of things, and other people have seen all sorts of things. And it's symbolic of the things that will be towards your mountain, and you will probably get an insight of what it is by looking. And if you don't know, then just go and meditate and ask God to show you. You know, what is this? I mean, people have had umbrellas, shoes, all sorts of stuff. You know, and they ask me, well, what does that mean? Well, I said, well, I don't know, go and ask God what it means. You know, and sometimes I do give them some clues and help a little bit, because I can interpret things like that. But the main thing is, we need to go to God and build a relationship where we can ask him and expect him to answer. Because then you're not dependent on anybody else. You've got to own personal relationship with God, not someone else's. You know, so that really is what you do. And then you must take authority. So then you must begin to rule from that place. Don't leave it empty. You know, and then, okay, what is my mandate to rule? So it all goes together. You know, it's not something you just do, and you know, and I wouldn't, if I didn't understand what the mountain was and didn't understand what was giving the enemy any authority, then I wouldn't go up against it until I was aware, because I'm responsible then to step into the place of authority. So if I'm not sure what it is, I won't be able to do it. You know, so it's working these things out so that we're having a fuller understanding of it. But it, you know, it's a key. You know, we have to rule, we have to govern, you know, and once we're established on our mountain, if you like, then we can administer there all the others. Once they're clear and we have an understanding of the authority and the mandate for the mountain, then we can administer from the one mountain, because that's who we are. And we carry that government with us, and our spirit will administer through the different mountains whenever we need to. You know, in different spheres. You know, it's not, what we don't want to do is get into a rut or a religious ritual, like, well, I must go on each mountain every day, otherwise, well, something, that's fear. And as soon as you start in fear, then already you're reinforcing the enemy's right to come back. You know, so it's relationship. We go and get from God our mandate for the day. We administer that. It may be not all the mountains get administered every day, because that may be not what God's calling us to do that day. But we're still in authority over them. I think that's really what I would see. Then what you then need to do, once you've taken the dragon out and you begin to rule, then you can act, and because you've repented here of what has given that the enemy, then you've got that which is in the middle. So now you have an arc between heaven and earth, which can shift the atmosphere. So then we need to clear the atmosphere of the earth, making sure that what contributed to us doing that is dealt with. You know, and sometimes that will be familiar spirits over us individually. Sometimes that will be things which are cultural in our town, city, region, nation, because culture is influenced through that which is in the atmosphere of the earth. And we must make sure we're not living according to the culture of where we are, but according to being an ambassador from heaven and living in the embassy of heaven, even if it's just me in my life as the house of God being an embassy, I'll do that. Of course, when you realize that as a church you become an embassy and then you begin to share that out, then you realize that you're not living under the rules of the country that we're in, or the town or the city. You live by a higher system of values and a higher system of authority, because we live by the kingdom. So then we have that ministry of reconciliation to reconcile heaven and earth and to bring everything back into harmony and agreement, you know. So I would say that would be the general process for dealing with that. Make sure you know the truth. You know, God will often give you scriptures, or things will come to you in the period leading up to dealing with some of these things that build your confidence, and then they just come out as declarations, or you speak the truth and you use that as weapons to just deal with it. Now, sometimes it takes several slices at the dragon's head to take it off, you know, because you might not be wielding the sword with full force because you're learning how to do it. So it may need several declarations or several truths to bring it. You know, mostly for me, I would just, because I know the authority, I just come and slice it off. It was as simple as that. But, you know, we have to unlearn the process. But I think what goes with this is also knowing and carrying within your heart that which you are to administer. And that means we have to set our desires onto it. And I've been sharing quite a lot this week because I've really caught hold of something God's sort of taken me. Last week, before I went to Germany, he told me that I needed to come deeper into him into three levels. And so I was meditating around that, and the revelation came of what those levels were, and then I began to focus my attention on them. And what came from that was how you frame desire in your own heart to enable you to then carry the authority towards something that you have. Because whatever you carry in your heart, you can take into the realm of heaven and you can administer it. But you have to open your heart and receive it. If it's a scroll or a mandate or even a person or a city or a nation, you can carry those things in your heart. But to do that, you have to learn how to fix your thoughts on them and begin to brood and incubate them and to see them begin to grow and form in you. And that doesn't just happen with, right, I'm just going to take this scroll, put it in my heart, end the story, I'll move on. You can't shape desire like that. You know, and if we're looking to outwork the desires of God's heart for us, then we must set the desires of our heart on those things and actually deliberately choose to look into them, because what you look into, you become. Whatever you behold, you become. So if you begin to look in and shape that desire begins to draw and shape you towards it and then releases authority through you to administer it. But that takes some pretty, you know, some effort, you know. And so, you know, when God starts to speak to you about something, you can't take it lightly. You really need to draw into it and form it within you so that when you take it into the realms of heaven, or when you go close around the ark and you begin to vibrate with the frequency of God there, and you begin to open your heart to can write things on your heart or unveil things that are on your heart, then ultimately you're looking for your eternal destiny to be manifested here and now. And there's a process that I am starting to engage in, which is helpful in doing that. And it starts with placing things in your heart, and then it starts with building those desires. And when you then begin to see how those desires are to be outworked in government, you need to see the end and you need to see the beginning. Because I haven't taught a lot about this before because I wanted to get people focused on engaging the four faces of God in the ark and being stepping into him there and engaging with the resonant frequency of the will of God there. But actually, when God manifests in the between the sort of cherubim's wings, between the ark, if you like, he brings with him the past and the future. And so you can look into the past and look what it was before sin and look what was God's intention and destiny in eternity, and then that will begin to shape how you feel about the desires, because you'll see them from a pure perspective before. And so, you know, what is the desire of God's heart for me? Okay, he formed that in his heart and his thoughts before eternity. Therefore, before sin spoilt it, it existed in purity. And I can look back into that. I can also look into the future. Well, in the future, there is the absolute full completeness of everything that's in the desire of God for me. Should I learn how to do it and in this realm? You know, so I can look again into the future where there's no sin and where there's fulfillment. And I can look into the future 6 months, a year, 5 years, whatever, and I can see what that desire should look like at work then, and then I can bring that into today to begin to shape today. So it's like I'm bringing my destiny from eternity past and the future together to manifest it. By it will create and draw the desires of my heart and transform me and change me in accordance with what that prophetic future is, which is in agreement with what God desired for me in the scroll of my destiny before I was conceived and back in eternity. You know, and you see that, you can see that then every mountain that you have, you can go and look at that mountain from the perspective of before there was sin and see how it looked, you know. So go back and look at what it looked like before Adam and Eve messed it up. And the thoughts about that, and as you meditate around that, the reality and the revelation will begin to form in you. And you will begin to realize the full potential of what you have and what you're supposed to have. You know, so, you know, in light of God empowered Adam and Eve, told them to be fruitful and to multiply, and told them to go and subdue the earth and have dominion over it, every situation of your mountain is tied to those things. You've been empowered to prosper, to succeed at the highest level. That's what it means to be blessed. You have been called to be fruitful. So to demonstrate what it is to live according to that, so that people can see the fruit and taste the fruit in your life. You've been called to multiply. So you've been called not just to keep this thing to yourself, but to multiply it so that it expands and there's no end to the increase of his government, and because it's multiplying. But you also have the call to subdue. Now that means that what was in the garden, you had to take out and subdue that which was in opposition to it. So again, it shows you that even though there was sin, there was still opposition to subdue, and they would have been able to overcome that because they would have been above it in the realms of the kingdom. Now, of course, heaven and earth and the gardens overlapped. So they walked in the garden of God. God walked in their garden. They had access to the realms of the atmosphere. They had access to the realms of the kingdom. And they were supposed to take what they saw in the realms of heaven and to manifest that out of the garden to transform the rest of the world. And I'm convinced that it would have gone beyond the world into other worlds or other dimensions, because that the whole universe is of that creative order, both physical and spiritual, was always our intended to be our inheritance. And so we have to learn how to see it from the perspective of before it got messed up, and see it ultimately from the perspective of when it's going to be fulfilled, and then manifest that in this day. And I think you can see that in, you know, the high priest who came in once a year to that place, sang the names of God and the previous names of God in the sense of the people who had invested into that, and there was a thing that the high priest did. Obviously, Ark of the Covenant was a conductor of power and frequency, and that song drew the presence of God. And he came with some blood, and he came with all the sins of the nation for a year. Well, how could a little bit of blood and in 1 minute actually deal with a whole nation? Well, because if you look back into the past, Jesus was slain for the foundation of the world. So, the Hebrew circle is every end as a new beginning, so it's continually a circle. It never is linear, it's a circle. So we look at what was in the beginning, and we can see that Jesus was already slain before the foundation of the world. There's no sin there. What is there at the end? Everything is contained within time, so all our sin and everything is contained within time, so there's no sin at the end. So you can then bring that into the present to shape the present according to the past and the future. And so we live in freedom from sin. A whole nation's sin was blotted out because of what he was able to see into the future and in the past to manifest that in the day. And we have to learn to manifest that in our day, in our lives. And we need to frame it by developing the desire in accordance with God's desires. You know, and I think it's in one of the Psalms, Psalm 34, I think, it talks about God will give us the desires of our heart. Well, he's very likely to give us the desires of our heart if our desires are a match and aligned to his desires. And sometimes he does even give us the desires of our heart when they aren't, because we pester him and he does. You know, but there are consequences to that if they're not lining up God's purpose for us. You know, so there's a whole process around that which, you know, I think is so important that we get hold of and we learn how to embrace that, because then each mountain we will see from the perspective of desire burst out of our destiny scroll to manifest it. And it will shape and draw us towards it in the present, so that we can see the full outworking of it, you know. But it doesn't just happen. You know, you just don't go see a mountain. Oh, I see my mountain. Oh, I know everything about it. I just know what to do. I'm going to fully fulfill this just because I'm going to sit here and do nothing. It won't work like that. You know, and the more the desires of your heart are drawn towards those things, the less the desires of your heart are drawn towards anything else. Because total fulfillment comes in fulfilling your destiny. The world offers lots and lots of temporary fulfillment, which embraced and we've been drawn to. Now we need to get our desires set back on that which will be total fulfillment. And part of the process in authority is being a living sacrifice and making sure that there's nothing in us. And the order of Melchizedek and Joshua generation, whatever you want to call it, it has no genealogy. We have to have dealt with the past in our generational line, in our seed line, to be able to operate with the Spirit without measure like Jesus. Because Jesus said, the enemy's got nothing in me. And we have to be those that the enemy has nothing in us. You know, and that takes transformation, because the enemy does have stuff in us, you know, and we have to make sure that it's out of our bloodline, it's out of our behavioral patterns, it's out of our thinking patterns, and it's out of our DNA, so that we can be pure of heart, and the pure of heart will see God. So all these things work together, and it's a journey and a process. There's no instant fix. You know, we're so used to pushing a button and having instant gratification, whether it's turning on the TV or pressing the microwave button or someone laying hands on us and everything will be okay. The reality is this is a relationship, and you have to build and develop that relationship, surrendering as you go, so that, as John the Baptist said, you know, I must decrease so he can increase. And the less of me that there is operating and the more of him, and the less of my fleshly desires and the more of his spiritual desires that are operating in me, the more authority I will have when I'm on my mountain. Because lots of people I can help get on mountains and can go on mountains, but they won't be effective there if they're still struggling with things in their lives. Now, there's no condemnation, there's no guilt from God on that. There's just, hey, come closer, draw nearer, find the real source of life, find the things which will give you affirmation and approval and affection and love and acceptance in me, not in all the counterfeits and all the things that the enemy tries to offer us in the world that have damaged us over and over again. It's like, let's learn to embrace that which will bring life rather than that which will bring death. And it's a daily choice, because I have free will every morning to embrace the mercies of God for the today, or I can choose to do anything in my own strength, my own way. It's my choice that God gives me every day, because he recognizes my integrity as a person that he's created with free will. And he treats me with that. But of course, I don't want free will. You know, I've seen what free will does. I want his will, so I surrender my free will. I am crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. Now, the life I now live in this body or in the flesh, I live by faith of the Son of God who loved me and gave himself up for me, Galatians 2:20. But the reality is, it's like, I no longer live, but now I live. So what was that which was living? My old nature that came through Adam. What is living now? Actually, me and Christ and God and Jesus in one, becoming one spirit, because I'm joined together, and now we do things together. Now we're becoming one in that sense. So I focus and fix my eyes on that, and it's something you have to do every day. For me, fresh mercies every day. If I keep looking to yesterday and the source that came from yesterday, then it will use up today's resource. If I keep looking at tomorrow in the wrong way of the what if and the fear that can be what will happen tomorrow, then I'll use up today's resource and I'll run out. And then I'll feel heavy and burdened and heavy laden, because I will be doing things on my own strength. And God's desire is that I do things in his strength, joined with him, because the joy of the Lord is my strength. Well, how do I get the joy of the Lord? How do I get his peace? How do I get his love? Well, I just step into him. You know, I step into Christ Jesus. I step into the Father. I step into the four faces of God. I step into what belongs to me in that sense as my inheritance. And I begin to live out of that place. But we've not really learned to know what it is to step into very much. You know, it does say, you know, we put on things. So we can put on the skins or the mantles of Father, Son, and Spirit and have those things directing us. But you know, this is a relationship that takes time, and if we're going to develop desire, it will require discipline. End of story. And if we're not pursuing something, then we don't really desire it, because the pursuit of it will be the evidence that we're willing to seek after it. You know, keep seeking, keep knocking, keep asking, don't give up. Yeah, we've got to be perseverant. You know, the fruit of the Spirit, patience, is not just about being patient with people who wind us up. It's learning how to be perseverant and pressing through when there are obstacles, when there's things in the way. No, I'm not giving up. Yeah, I am not going to give up. I am going to persevere and press in until I take the land. I receive my promises. You know, but it's easier once you draw near to him and to outwork it. So, yeah, that's a rather long answer, but.
Yeah, no, that brought some, definitely one I'll study, listen and take notes on some more. You touched real briefly on, well, John, did you have anything before I ask another question?
No, go ahead, Peter.
Okay. All right, you've touched briefly on this whole thing of, you know, like the holding in the heart and desire and you taught us one time this the whole concept of like taking someone into heaven by holding them in your heart and then asking the Lord to send angels to clear the atmosphere over them, and then the Holy Spirit to overshadow them, especially just before they go to sleep, you know, or I mean, just after they've gone to sleep.
Yeah.
My question on that is, where does the line between, because now we're learning how to sit on our mountains and everything, and you know, rule. Where does the line between, you know, taking them up there and forgiveness and actually judgment start happening? Like, I know we don't judge, but to start asking for righteous judgment in situations or, you know, people's lives and stuff like that. I mean, is there, I fight a mental conflict there of, well, now I'm not supposed to be, you know, interfering, you know, the whole thing about charismatic witchcraft, yet at some point, I feel like we have to learn how to judge and actually bring some righteous rule of heaven into a situation. Well, seems like there's a delineation there that I'm. Could you sure. bring some clarity to that? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, first of all, you cannot control somebody, so you can't bind them to your will or to your purpose or what you would like for them in their lives. If you're going to bind anybody, you have to bind them to the purpose and will of God for their lives. So by using the keys of the kingdom to bind and to loose, you need to, you're declaring that they're bound to God's purpose and plan for their lives, and that must be the desire of your heart, not so that it will be, there must be nothing in it which is something that gives you a kickback from it, if you like. This isn't a sort of a bribery or, well, if they're blessed, then I'm going to be blessed. You know, this must not be the motive of our heart. We'd be trading negatively if we are looking to see someone else bless so that it will make our life easier, because our motive will be selfish rather than for them. So to carry someone in your heart, you must be willing to have their best interests at heart for them and for their blessing, not for yours. And that's absolutely vital. So, you know, you can't sort of go on a mountain and say, right, I'm going to bind this person to be my partner in life, when that is not right, you know, because that is control. That would be witchcraft. You're trying to control them into something. You know, I bind this person to bless me and give me, you know, their money. You know, that isn't the what it's for. But obviously, if our desire is for them, we carry that desire in our heart for them, you know, and it doesn't just happen by saying, oh, I put someone in my heart. If we do not spend time looking into their past in eternity and their future and begin to prophesy out of what God's desire is for them and to release that declaration over their lives, really we're just playing at it. It's got to be genuine, and therefore it takes time to cultivate that person. You can't hold many people in your heart. it's just not possible to spend that amount of time cultivating that. So you really need to know who is it that God's put on your heart for that level of intercession, if you like. Now, you know, I've taken the world into my heart, but it doesn't mean that I'm trying to sort of take every single person of the 7 billion odd people into my heart. I'm taking the world as a picture of God's purpose overall for things, which has caused me to be able to engage on a wider dimension. But I can take people, you know, and I've got the here, I've got the sort of our group of seven and our bench of three. You know, they're in my heart, and I want to release them and encourage them into what who they are and their destinies and things like that. Obviously, my wife and children. You know, there's things that we have to spend time doing it. You know, once you do that, then you're going to be sensitive to what is God's purpose for that person. You know, bring up a child in the way he should go, and he will not depart from it. Well, the way, the literal Hebrew word, means bent. And that bent means the sort of bias towards that which they're designed to go. So it's not like, oh, I'm going to tell them everything that they need to know about life, and then they won't depart from it. No, we need to find out from God what is God's destiny for them, and we need to help them fulfill it. And that's why they won't depart from their destiny if they know what it is. You know, they'll be drawn towards it. You know, so we take a scripture like that and we sort of use it to, well, if I teach them about God, then they won't depart from it later on. And actually, there's an element which is true, but only in association with their who they are and their identity in God and everything like that. And you won't get that by just, oh, well, I'm going to take you in my heart and that's job done. You have to spend time looking in the same way as you look in your own life to destiny in the past and the future, and begin to call that into the present to manifest in their lives. Now, there are obviously things that the enemy does to hinder that, and we can loose people from those things by taking authority and declaring and decreeing according to God's desire for them to be free. Again, you know, sin gives the enemy access to bring a veil of darkness. If we release forgiveness and minister that forgiveness, then that veil can be removed. And that does work better at night, I guess, when they're not asleep, when they're asleep and can't do any more sinning. But in general, they still have free will. You are preparing the way to give them a choice to make rather than be blind to the choice. You know, you can't make them make the choice. Doing everything you can to make it an opportunity available to people to embrace their destiny and to follow, but they still have a choice. It just, you know, and you can also, you can step into the courts and you can ask, are there accusations, what are the sins that are causing the enemy to blind them? You can go through a process. But, you know, you've got to be pretty committed to do that sort of process, because it's not just a two-minute job. It takes time and a willingness and an effort. That's why you have to place them within your heart and cultivate the desire for them that is like God's desire for them, which takes time. You know, now, when it comes then to authority and judgment, if you are loosing them from the things that are binding their lives, then you're releasing judgment on the basis of what Jesus has done on the cross. The authority to set them free, the authority to bind up the brokenhearted, to set the captive free, the authority to preach good news to the poor, you know, to declare the favorable year of the Lord. You're doing it out of the authority that you have. Now, ultimately, judgment is never to death. It's always to life. So what you're judging is, you're saying, that isn't of God in that person's life, therefore I'm going to pray for a loosing of that from their lives. That's really what you're judging. You're not judging the thoughts and intentions or motives of their heart, because that's not your responsibility. But what you are shown and what you can see and what God shows you in the courts and everything else, you can make a judgment. You know, and that judgment is to bless them and to bring them into wholeness and blessing, you know. And I really believe we need to be just careful as Christians, and particularly now we're engaging in realms of authority, that everything operates out of love. Kingdom is about righteousness and justice. And justice is just seeing the right decision to be made and outworked. So that's what you're doing when you bring judgment. You're actually bringing a judicial situation so that they can be found not guilty, if you like, and judged under the covering of God's love for them. So it's always about judging to life, not death. And I think there's been so much in terms of the religious spirit that operates through people in which they try and judge things in the world. And then it just presents a picture of Christians as those that go around with placards saying, don't have any fun. You know, don't do this, this is bad for you. Don't do that, that's bad for you. You know, and to me, that's not what it should be. We should be so filled with the glory and presence of God that people just want to come and see what God's glory is like because they see us. Not going around saying, that's wrong, you shouldn't do that, you know. And, you know, the religious police are in nowhere more seen in judging other Christians for what they believe. And that's not my business. My business is to know what I believe and to live according to it. And everyone else has to do that for their own lives. And if they make different choices or they believe different things from me, that's their responsibility and that's between them and God. It's not my responsibility to try and change them. You know, so you know, if that helps a little bit.
Yeah, that does. Well, again, I was hoping we would have time for a little activation, but I know you.
Yeah. Okay.
You have another session coming up here, don't you?
I do. Yeah. Well. Okay.